Welcome into your COVID hour. I'm Clayton. This is Natalie. No, this is redacted. COVID, because we've all got COVID in the house and some form or fashion of it. We're coughing, we're sneezing, we're a mess, but we're here. So we apologize in advance if we have to cover microphones and do all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have a man cold because you told me on Monday when I was sick, you're like, don't mention that you're sick. Don't mention
I didn't
it on
say
the
that.
Show. Yes, you did. And then now that he's sick, it's okay to lead with it. This is
we
what's
all
called
knew you
a
were
man
sick
you,
the other
a
day.
Man cold. No, okay.
This is always what happens.
All right.
Men are not allowed to get sick. This is always how it goes. A woman gets sick. And then if a man gets sick like a day later, the husband gets sick a day later, they're like, oh, you're just getting sick because I'm sick. This is always how it happens. Anyway, welcome into the show. We hope you're doing well on this Wednesday. We've got a lot of news to get to. Very, very busy show. We're going to look at the latest in Maui and what is happening there. Why can't we get answers? Why is there a media blackout? Where are the missing children? What caused these fires? Was it directed energy weapons? Was it Hawaiian Electric Company, that's a for-profit company that failed to turn off their electric grid ahead of time? We are going to dive deep into this today try to get some answers on this.
Plus, we're going to bring you an update on the war in Ukraine, because the Biden administration is freaking out that if President Trump regains office, their precious war will no longer be there for them to profit from. And so the neocons seem to be putting mechanisms in place to continue the war, no matter what you vote. We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Matthew Bullock in our chat says, garlic and ginger cures everything. All right. Got it. Someone else says, get your sister or your wife under control. I'm not going to do that. Also on today's show, we're going to talk about Canada pushing for new mask mandates. Yeah, holding protests demanding that the health authorities institute new mask mandates. People, citizens taking to the street, demanding that their government reenact mask mandates. Like, this is a clown world gone mad. And Redacted starts right now. Hello, everyone. Welcome, welcome. And to be clear, on Monday, what I was referring to, it was because it was our first day back after a vacation, and our daughter was sick, and like our mother-in-law was sick. I was like, you know, that was sort of top of mind for us, but we'd been away for so long. I just didn't want to spend the enormous part of
right,
the show.
Don't tell
about
the viewers that you're sick, but it's okay. Now that you're sick, they need to know that.
Guys, I'm sick. I just want to let everyone know
that. Yeah, this is what a man cold is. Okay.
Hey guys, I wasn't feeling particularly well this weekend and into Monday.
Philip, are you okay?
Oh, tell me how are your eyes? Yeah, I'm so sad for you guys. Yeah.
David, are you sick?
Now, eat so more meat. Come on now. Eat more meat.
All right, boys. All right. Yes, it has been going through our family. We traveled with a group of grandparents and cousins, and there were 14 of us. And so now 8 of us have fallen sick. 2 tested positive for COVID. The rest of us who've been sick, myself included, are testing negative. It's, I don't know. You know, we talked about these tests and vaccinations and all of that on Monday's show. So we won't revisit that. But Clayton is low energy, what President
low energy.
Trump would call
low energy. But I'm going to bring it. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do it. You guys are here joining us. Great. So if you guys are here, then I'm here. And as Cranky Cletus in our Rumble chat says, dude, give up. You're never going to win this argument. Cranky Cletus might be my new favorite screen name. Cranky Cletus. Oh, get them Duke boys. All right.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't know why, you know, when I was sick.
All right. Let's move on. So we got a newsletter. Should we tell you about our daily newsletter? It's a fantastic newsletter. You should all subscribe to it. It's amazing. Go there and sign up. It's totally free. Go to redacted.inc and sign up. And tomorrow morning, first thing in the morning, you will receive the newsletter. Natalie works really hard on it. She's a great writer, and she's an amazing human being. She does everything correct. She writes the newsletter, and then I come in and do basically nothing to get it published. I kind of put in a few little keywords, and that's about it. But you'll wind up, you'll see it in your inbox, and first thing tomorrow morning, written by Natalie. It's an amazing newsletter. Again, she is an amazing
person. You're not in the doghouse, darling. And I am taking care of him.
That was just some agile backpedaling, I got to say. Yeah, that's some of the best I've ever seen.
That's what we do.
No, you'll still get your Epsom baths.
Oh, good. All right, let's get into the news, shall we? Enough dilly-dallying. So we've got a lot to talk about. It has been 22 days since a massive fire destroyed the town of Lahaina on Maui. 2,000 homes incinerated, hundreds of people killed in an area largely owned and lived in by longtime Native Islanders. The rest of Maui was remarkably fine. It's amazing how that worked. But that didn't stop the governor, by the way, from telling tourists, hey, stay away from Maui. Maui is closed to tourists. And it worked. I spoke to friends today on Maui and other sources who say it's virtually a ghost town this morning. Tourism has basically totally dried up all the way on the other side of the island that is totally untouched. Hotels are open, but no one is going to Maui. So the governor's declaration, stay away, is really, really working. Tourism is the lifeblood of this island. And of course, this is like a return to COVID era when no one could travel there. And it's devastating to this economy. Real estate developers have already swooped in. They've been making big money offers to buy up the burned land that these Native Islanders spent years saying no to selling. We're not going to sell this. We've taken offers and fielded offers for years. We're not going to sell it. Now, of course, these offers are pouring in left and right. It's been 22 days, and still the ATF hasn't released any official cause of the fire. Was it a directed energy weapon, as some suggest? Was it arson? Was it the electric company that didn't turn off their power lines? The Maui County is suing the Hawaii Electric. They say they're negligent in all of this, that they didn't turn off their power lines. You know this part of the story. And they said, look, you guys had an opportunity to turn off your power lines after the National Weather Service issued their high wind alerts and their high wind warnings. Now, earlier that morning on August 8th, of course, there was a small fire. The police were able to put it out, 100% contained. Firefighters and police got that totally under control. But then it wasn't until 3 in the afternoon when the massive fire struck. But now, Hawaii Electric says they turned off their power lines 6 hours before the fire started. So that couldn't be the cause of it. They're saying, hey, don't look at us. Do you believe them, by the way? Let us know in the chat rooms right now if you believe them. Yes, I believe the Hawaii Electric Company that turned off a for-profit company, by the way. This is a for-profit company. They say, we didn't have anything to do with it. We turned off those power lines 6 hours ago. Just take their word for it. How many of you believe them? It's like Pfizer telling us they didn't know about the adverse effects for their vaccines. We know that they knew about this and they kept it quiet from us. So 6 days after the fire, the CEO of Hawaii Electric didn't have any info about the power lines being turned off. Was asked about this in a press conference 6 days after. Watch.
Why didn't you shut off the power when the wind started to pick up?
As I said earlier, it's still in the early days. We're still looking at all the information, and we haven't actually had a chance to do all of that at this time.
With all due respect, it's been 6 days, though, so almost 6 days.
And we've been putting everything we've got to helping our communities right now and our employees who are going through a lot and supporting them so that they can support the communities.
So to me, that would be an easy thing, though, to figure it out, wouldn't it be, right? Like you either someone in your office issued an order or they didn't. You'd be able to track that chain of command. There'd be email exchanges. There would be
You would think that there would be a way to meter electricity.
Right. They're so good at telling us how much we use. They can't figure out if they turned off their own power lines, their substations. Go ahead, Philip.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, maybe it's like that mysterious switch in the break room that nobody's sure what it does. It actually just turns off Maui's power, and somebody just flipped that, and nobody knew about it.
It's like Homer Simpson in. He flips up. I turned off all of the entire city. You just can't figure that out.
Right. Maybe you log into your portal and see where people being charged after this time that you said was turned off. You know, these things are not that hard to figure out in this day and age.
With a computer system that's running an entire electrical grid, a for-profit company, your computers would show power being turned off at the exact second that was carried out.
She acts like she has to dig it out from under. We haven't had a chance to do that.
Yeah, we're dealing with a lot of rubble right now. Our families are in disarray. We're just trying to make sure we're taking care of our community, so we can't get those answers.
We can't go and answer those
questions. My freaking iPhone, for crying out loud, has the ability to tell me the exact moment that the device is powered down. I can go into the settings and see the cycling stages of my iPhone, for crying out loud. But they can't figure that out. Beyond
well, that just tells me their PR company hasn't given them their response yet.
Right. Because we didn't realize someone was going to ask you at a press conference. We should have had those prepared remarks ready to go. Maybe Corinne Jean-Pierre can hand out some talking points for him. Beyond who started the fire, though, and who stands to benefit from all of this, here are the other big questions that we have here on this show. Number one, what happened to the children? As of this hour, 2,000 children are missing. That's no small number. Sources I'm speaking with say that it's likely, highly likely, that many of these children have been taken off, sold off in child trafficking rings.
What?
This is textbook studies in disaster zones, war zones. As Tim Ballard on our show, of course, who Jim Caviezel played in the great movie The Sound of Freedom, says, disaster zones are the number one place where sex exploitation and child traffickers go in and exploit. Children are captured, sold off on the black market. Parents aren't around. Something's happened to the parents. This is a perfect opportunity. This happens all the time. This is not new. This is not something that we're making up. The number one way that children are captured is after a disaster. Wars, hurricanes, typhoons, earthquakes. Just look at Indonesia, look at Ukraine. This is exactly what's happening. Might be uncomfortable to talk about, but it's true. And according to EV News today, the situation has been further inflamed by accusations downplaying the high number of child victims to protect the Biden administration and local Democrats. Over 2,000 children from Lahaina's public schools remain unaccounted for. Unaccounted for. The official death number still sits at 115 people dead. The number hasn't moved. That number is fishy at best, criminal at worst, actually, and the number of missing doesn't actually add up. It's right now it's 388 missing, which is a total lie. Even CBS News, New York Magazine also saying this number doesn't make sense and questioning these official numbers that we're getting. At least 1,100 people, and that the FBI even revised their numbers to match, went jumped up hundreds when they revised their own list. What's going on here? So other reports have it over 2,000, but they're sticking with their 388 number. And New York Magazine asks, why are hundreds of people still missing on Maui? What is going on here?
Well, I was wondering if maybe school hadn't started yet, but it's easy to find in the Hawaii Public School Department of Education. They started in August.
Yeah.
So those kids should be in school. Yeah.
They should be in school, and the schools have them unaccounted for, over 2,000 of them. We don't know where they are. So where are these missing children of Maui? We'd like some answers. We'd love for the governor to help us. We'd love for officials on the ground there, the sheriff's office and others, to tell us, but we can't get answers. People are being kept from getting information, and homeowners are being arrested now if they attempt to go to their house to see if their home is there. Weeks after the fires, here's the Washington Post reports, most residents are blocked from access to Lahaina homes. They can't get there. In fact, today, being handed permission slips if they're able to go. Blue permission slips on their way to try to get back home, if they're lucky, if the sheriff's department will let them. Sources are telling me today that cell service is almost non-existent in this area, spotty at best. Government was supposed to bring in those Starlink systems. They were promising to try to get some of the Starlink systems, but that hasn't happened. To even try to get some, you know, WhatsApp phone calls or like FaceTime audio phone calls, using internet service to make phone calls with family members and others, or just to get some information out there, they can't. And people are scared to leave their homes. People who still have homes are holed up and not wanting to leave. And now, over the past few days, a large amount of black fencing is being erected to block out the viewpoint into the fire zone along the highway. This is just what the fence looks like here. It's like, it's not enough to just have it like be a barrier. It's got to be like taller, opaque and taller than me. But of course, they're saying that this is 300,000 feet of linear dust screening. And that's all it is. Don't worry about it. It's just for dust. And they got $3 million in emergency funding to put this out there. So just to be clear,
how did they
go ahead?
How did they block all the dust before this then?
Right. I guess dust wasn't an dust is suddenly an issue now because of the fires.
Right.
Look, I don't understand it because I've been in the media a long time and I've been a journalist for a long time. I've covered the wildfires in Montana, hurricanes in Florida, floods in West Virginia. I've never been kept from covering a fire zone before. I stood in like disgusting knee deep water that's like horrible sewage, and no one said a word to me. They're like, oh, you're a reporter. That's what you do. Go there. But apparently you can't do any of that here. And they're keeping you from seeing this. This program, by the way, started on August 16th to put up this fence. So, 8 days after this fire. And they got $3 million in emergency funding to do it? Okay, what about the people of Lahaina? Like, you're more concerned about a dust fence?
Where do they come from? Like, how do you build this, that fence?
Where do you get the fence guys?
Yeah.
Where do you get this emergency fence guys to come in and do this? It's amazing. And now this morning, on top of that, drones are now banned. So if you want to fly a drone over this area, good luck. Initial drone footage kind of came out but now you're not allowed to do it anymore. Officials have now outlawed drones. According to independent journalist Jeff Cygnus, who tried to do this, if you're on public property, you're no longer allowed to use drones. Public property, you can't use it. Cygnus also is reporting that unmarked police cars have been showing up, standing guard around the perimeter. So if you even stop your car, you're going to be told to get back in the car and go. So these unmarked police cars with no, Hawaiian information on them at all, popping up all over the place and being told to stay away, blocking the perimeter of this. He says the National Guard told him to get back in his car, keep moving. And it's amazing that we can, by the way, deploy the National Guard to Lahaina, but not to the southern border. Just think about that for a second. So listen to his discussion about this wall. Watch.
There seems to be a huge emphasis on ensuring that the media and anyone else can't see what's going on here in Lahaina, West Maui. There are miles and miles of this black fence going up that was not here before that is obscuring ground zero and making sure no one can see what's going on inside of there from the road. No one can get in there. No one can take any pictures. And then I've also seen these weird foreign police cars showing up, these special police, I'm not sure what to call them. This is a Nissan, but there's quite a large presence of these standing guard around the perimeter. We've also lost our ability to fly drones really anywhere near this area. Now, this 20-second clip here that I tried to get out of my car and show what was going on, I was almost immediately, after these 20 seconds, National Guard came, chased me off, yelled at me, told me to get back in my car and keep moving. So you cannot pull over. You can't even stop your car anywhere near any of this anymore.
Regardless, there is a massive human element to all of this, of course. Thousands of missing children, adults that have lost everything. Businesses destroyed because tourists won't come. Businesses destroyed because of the fires. Developers trying to buy up these people's lands. And because a governor basically told, tourists not to come to this area, this economy in ruins. And there's now a concert that's a benefit concert that's about to unfold on September 2nd. Our friends over at the Global Health Project are putting this together. Eric Clapton. It's amazing. They called them. They're like, Eric, would you like to be a part of this? He said, absolutely. I will do it. I'll clear my calendar. These other artists that are also part of this concert, all proceeds, 100% of the proceeds will go to the victims of these fires. You can see on the screen there, you can text the word mahalo to 53-555 to donate. One of the organizers is Dr. Kat Lindley from the Global Health Project. I had a chance to speak with her just a few minutes ago to ask her about the human element of this and what we can expect from this event. Listen, Dr. Kat Lindley joins us now. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us about this event that Global Health Project is putting on to save Maui right now? Can you tell us about the September 2nd concert? And then I want to get into more specifics about what's happening to the children and the people on Maui.
Yeah, so we felt that, government response has been horrible. the people are in need, and no one is really doing anything. And one of the things that we decided as Global Health Project is to figure out a way to help as many people as we can, no matter what the subject is. We talked about the oath in the past, but now we see people in need, and we kind of started calling friends in our contact list and decided to do this benefit concert that's going to benefit the residents of Lahaina 100%, because it's going to go through a church in Calvary Chapel in South Maui. A friend of mine who is a pediatric cardiologist, Dr. Kirk Milhone, is actually a pastor there as well. And his church has been helping people, boots on the ground. And for us, it's really important to make sure that everything goes directly to them. There is no, red tape on how they're going to get help.
Great. So the 100% of the proceeds will go to the victims in Lahaina, which is amazing. And I want to put this up on the screen again. If you text the word mahalo to 53-555 to donate, of course, Eric Clapton will be a part of the concert as well. And that's going to be fantastic. I want to talk about your contacts there at the hospital. What are you hearing about the victims? What are you hearing about them being able to get the help that they need on the island?
From things, that I've heard, especially coming from Dr. Kirk Milhone and his wife, who are residents of Maui, they all feel that we need to make sure that this outpouring of help continues. And one of the ways people can just do it is continue your plans to visit Maui. Don't just cancel your reservations. Maui is going to need help for a long time. So even if you are, visiting a hotel on a different part of the island, the economy needs to continue flourishing, because this need is going to be for a long time. Some of the stories that I think we all have heard are the stories of children being lost. And, I was just listening actually to Glenn Beck this morning, and a pastor that's helping from another church who is also on the ground was saying there was a mother who was allowed to go back into her house. And her son, her son's bedroom was still fairly intact, and he was sitting on the bed holding to his dog. I have five kids. I don't know how many you have, but I think the biggest trauma for parents is for something to happen to our children. I hope and pray fairly constantly that I do not outlive my children. There are so many kids lost, so many kids that had to stay home because the schools were out and things like that. And it doesn't matter how incompetent you are. It's just like, I can't even imagine that this has been allowed to happen.
The great concern we have here at Redacted, of course, is about the children and the reports, as we've been covering here tonight, about the 2,000 apparent missing children, unaccounted for in the school system and missing. And, of course, something we've covered extensively here on our show is about these disaster zones being used for child trafficking. And that is a great concern. So these numbers are really mixed right now. The missing, the official number is 388. But there are other reports saying it's well into the thousands, and there's these conflicting numbers about the missing. Parents know that their children are missing, or they've been scooped up if the parents are now considered deceased. People coming in under the guise of trying to help and then taking these children away from this area. That is a terrible concern, is it not?
It's a huge concern because, society can be measured, in my opinion, by what it does to his children. And if we cannot protect our children, and if we cannot, ensure that they live happy lives, I don't think that we are doing our job as society. And, being a parent, being just a human being, the stories that are coming out are just heart-wrenching, and we need to make sure that we all stand together. Hearing that our government was willing to give $700 to a household, right, for whatever reason, it's just, you would think with all the money we have given to the rest of the world, we could do a lot more for the citizens of this country. And the fact that we can't, this is why people are coming together. There are so many churches out there so many organizations that are doing the job that government should have done. And we need to make sure that this continues because, you know, today in the news cycle is the hurricane in Florida, and that's a huge, big thing. But people are going to forget Maui, and we just need to make sure that they never forget.
Well, we'll put this back up here on the screen again. The Save Maui event happens on September 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern time. It'll be featured exclusively on Rumble. It'll be live streamed on Rumble. Eric Clapton, a part of it as well. Five times August, among others. And you can text the word Mahalo to 53-555 if you want to donate anything that you can to contribute. Again, 100% of the proceeds will go to the victims of those fires. And thank you to Dr. Kat Lindley for helping to organize this event and being a part of it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me and speaking about the event. I just want to mention one thing. I hope that everyone supported these artists that are going to participate in this event, because as soon as we asked, everyone said yes. It was I'll make sure that my calendar is clear. And I just hope that everyone supports them and come and support our event as well.
Wonderful. Well, it's great to hear. It's great to hear. Dr. Kat Lindley, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. And in the chat, people are saying, you know, get Tim Ballard on the case. In fact, I reached out to Tim and his team today to look into this. So hope to have an update on what they find with all these missing children out there. And a lot of people will say, you know, well, where were the kids? Where were the parents not speaking out about their missing children? And many of them are, of course. But, you know, again, there's so many more that are missing, so many parents that are also been killed in this that we don't know or unaccounted for. And these numbers are shifting. So 800 missing, but then some are saying 300. Now it's over 1,100. Is it up to 2,000 with the 2,000 kids? How do you square only 388 missing when there's over 2,000 kids missing? The numbers just don't make sense. Then you've got a police chief also in this who is, you know, there's a lot of questions about this police chief who is also the coroner, which, as many people point out, is illegal, and was also in part of the Las Vegas there during, of course, the strip shooting, and is now here and asked for a massive raise and was granted this massive raise. So there's a lot of really weird inconsistencies with these numbers and the people involved in this, and I hope that we get some answers in the coming days here.
Yeah, so this story is fishy.
Very.
I'll get out.
Yeah. All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Wednesday. We're going to look at the latest on the war in Ukraine, because as president, we've been talking about this idea of a forever war. Some people say, no, we're not going to be in Ukraine forever. Well, today, the Biden administration making big strides to make sure that any other president that comes into the White House, any extra president that comes into the White House over the next few years, would not have an opportunity to end the war in Ukraine, putting in place a forever agreement with Ukraine to keep the money and weapons flowing into that country. We're also going to look at Canada's mask mandate because a number of Canadians are now pushing for and calling for a return to mask mandates north of the border. So we'll get to
that. Doesn't mean they want to wear them. They mean they want you to.
They want you to. Yeah, not just them. They're doubled up. They've got five masks on, but they want you to do it as well. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Fast Growing Trees, because right now you're entering the season right here into September and into October, a great time to do planting. One of the best times, actually, to plant a shrub or a tree varietal that's perfectly tailored to your climate and your needs, from Meyer lemons to evergreens to shade trees, everything in between. You know, once you get out of this ridiculously hot August and into the cooler temps, it's a perfect time to plant that tree. And our friends over at Fast Growing Trees will let you be able to do just that and ship them right to your front door based on your own zip code and your own climate. So what's great is when you go there, you type in your information and they'll tell you what are the best shrubs for your climate, so you're not trying to plant a palm tree in Alaska. I wonder if that would work, actually. Might work. Fast-growing trees have specialized degrees, their plant experts do, with training, and they're able to help troubleshoot from root to leaf. It's like the telehealth for your plants. We got a Japanese maple that we ordered from Fast Growing Trees. They delivered it perfectly, and you don't have to get all your car messed up with dirt and everything trying to get it from like the Home Depot or anything. It delivered right to your door. It was gorgeous, planted it, and it gives you all the instructions, and that thing is massive now and is absolutely beautiful. So join almost 2 million happy Fast Growing Trees customers, and you want to get 15% off? You're going to do that right now if you use our link. If you go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted, you'll get 15% off your entire order. 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted. Our thanks to Fast Growing Trees for supporting independent journalism and supporting what we do here on this show.
All right. How you doing? You feeling okay?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm going to get some water.
Just get a little bit of water.
Just get a little water.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, if you need a cough, you can mute yourself because I got this one. Just so you know, if you're new to this show, Clayton and I take turns researching our segments. So every so often we'll see a comment in YouTube saying, why does he talk over her? Why is she doing all the talking? It's because we take turns researching the segments.
Why is she doing all the talking? Yeah. Why is he doing all the talking?
She never shuts up. I'm like, but it's my turn. I was quiet the first time. So that's how this works. Just so you know.
But it is a talk show. So, yeah. You know, everyone's allowed to talk and we have a conversation about the news. It's just, it's a lot of heavy lifting. So we kind of take turns.
Anyway. Okay. You pipe down over there and blow your nose and I will take this one. Are you ready?
All right. I'm ready.
Do you need it?
Stop stalling. Get to it.
You sniveling little kid over there.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, many things are happening all at once around the war in Ukraine, and it feels like the neocons are hedging their bets and trying to rip the brakes out of the car. Let's summarize this, and then we'll dig in bit by bit. So the first thing that's happening, in no order of particular importance, is that NATO is attacking Russia with drone attacks. We're going to look at that in a second. The U.S. deciding to send more money to Ukraine and weaponry, and the neocons absolutely freaking out that President Trump could win re-election and ruin their precious war. So first to those drone attacks. Here's video this morning from the mayor from a city called Pskov. I don't know if I'm saying that properly. Sorry, that's louder than I thought it would be. So Pskov is a city north of Moscow. So what are they doing there? Why would they be there? Let's look at this attack, and then it happened quite early in the morning. We'll take a look at this one as well, where you just see the smoldering wreckage of this. Now, let's look where Pskov is on a map compared to where the conflict is in Ukraine after we watch that. Okay, take a look at the map. Sorry about that. So you can see that it is quite far. From the red circle there is an approximation of where the counteroffensive is in Donbas region. That's not close. Ukraine should not be capable of firing that far. So who did it? Because remember, President Biden, he gave us his promise, his word that the U.S. would not be sending rocket systems that could reach inside of Russia when he announced weapons packages late last year. And so why? No, not that one. That one. Yes, thank you. So how would Ukraine do this if we weren't going to send them weapons that could reach that far? One possibility is that Pskov is not far from Estonia and Latvia, both of which are NATO countries. Any chance they had anything to do with that? So basically, we can surmise that it's NATO, right? It's either from these NATO countries or it's NATO backed by Ukraine. And Joe Biden lied when he said that he wouldn't send any weapons that could reach inside Russia, which we know the second thing is true because Ukraine has been firing inside of Russia for a long time now, for several months. Russia says they thwarted these attacks and no casualties were suffered. How do you prepare for attacks in places like this that are nowhere near war zones and then successfully thwart them? It's kind of good fodder to think about, right? Like, makes you wonder, could your city do that? If you don't live near a war zone, could your city just thwart drone attacks? You hope, right? Meanwhile, Russia says that it is targeting military command centers for Ukraine in this Kupiansk region, and over 100 Ukrainian soldiers died in that attack. Here is that headline. Now, most of the weaponry that was destroyed, that Russia says they destroyed, clearly came from NATO, and the U.S. will replace that gear, or at least they're going to try. Here is a statement from the White House just yesterday announcing additional security assistance for Ukraine to the tune of $250 million. Let's go ahead and look at this pack list that they're sending. It's all kinds of missiles, HIMARS, mine clearing equipment, different types of missiles, hydro rockets. Spare parts says you need spare parts, I would assume. Now, along with this announcement, the Pentagon released a fact sheet showing the amount of aid that the U.S. has sent to Ukraine in totality, and it is over $43 billion. Now, I'm just going to let this play. This is sort of, I just running through it. It's a running list of, you know, all kinds of Christmas gifts. Now, all of this equipment, by the way, may be just being wasted. Redacted correspondent Mike Jones is reporting from the Donbass. He's going to join us tomorrow to talk about this. He's spoken to captured Ukrainian soldiers who are living in Russia who have said that they're being directed to take this weaponry out to the fields and then shoot them off into nowhere. Just shoot them off to waste them because it's kind of like you're... vacation hours, like use it or lose it.
It reminds me of the movie, did you ever see Falling Down with Michael Douglas? An amazing movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing movie. And he goes, he's so frustrated about all the construction that's happening on these streets. And he's like, what? This thing has been under construction now for like 2 years. And he's like, there's nobody working here. Where is everybody? And he flips out at it. And he turns out that they're basically, they get a certain quota every year. They have to use that quota. They have to exceed that quota in order to make sure that they get more money in their budget the following year. So it's like, here, take these weapons, go out into the cornfield. You better fire them off because if you don't show them in use, then Uncle Sam's not going to send us more stuff.
Yeah.
They've got to look like they're being used or lost or destroyed. Otherwise, we're not going to get more stuff.
Now, these refugees are saying that when they had been asking, why are we shooting weapons into the air? They're told, shut up and do what they're told. We're going to bring you more about that tomorrow because this is from one of our reporters, from the mouth of a soldier who was a Ukrainian soldier who was told to do these things. So we'll get more from that story tomorrow. It's kind of like, you know, your vacation hours at work. If you don't use them up, you don't get any more next year. Well, you get more, but you lose those hours, right? So they're being told, if you want more, you got to fire these off, fire off these blanks. I mean, I guess as an assignment goes, if you're like, you don't want me to kill anybody and we're just wasting our time, let's do it. Let's run the clock out, right?
Right.
That's a better assignment than most. So, but this is our money. And aren't we supposed to care about the environment? Shouldn't we not want that? Right. I think that nobody wants to be sending weapons, period. So why then can the U.S. open its wallet further for all this weaponry? Well, that's due to an accounting error that they told us about a few weeks ago. They said they overvalued some of the gear they sent. So, cost less than we thought it did. So, you know, let's catch that up and just reach into our coffers and give you more. That's basically why they're saying they're doing this now. It is no doubt, though, that this war will continue while President Biden is in power and his lackeys, who still don't even know where the Donbass is. This is a video we showed you from the Gray Zone in June, where Representative Jamal Bowman admitted he didn't even know where Donbass was, but still, yes, I'm for the war. I don't understand it. Don't know where it's happening. Don't know the nuance of that. But yes, I'm for the war. Watch this video. This is from June, and then we're going to give you an update.
That's in Crimea.
I don't know if I know much about that. I need to get into the details and learn some more about that.
Yeah. You know what those are?
No. Tell me. What? Educate me.
Well, let me ask you this. What's your opinion on the war for Ukraine? Do you support U.S. aid to the war in Ukraine?
Yes.
Why do you support that?
Because Putin's a madman, and we got to stop him. But I'm anti-war in general.
Okay.
All right.
But just so you know, the Donbass and Crimea, those are the central regions in Ukraine, which were in dispute and which started the war over those regions.
Okay.
So.
Okay. To the beach.
Yeah, where's the Donbass? Do you know where the Donbass is? Do you know where Crimea is? He goes, I don't know anything about those. I'm going to have to look into that beginning. I don't know much about that. But,
yeah, cool.
But I'm anti-war. But Putin's a madman.
Right. Okay. Those people are civilians who've been fired on for 10 years by Ukraine. Cool. Okay. I'll look it up. I'll look on Wikipedia. If Wikipedia confirms this, then maybe I'll get back to you. Well, they did get back to him, and he did not study. Watch.
Congressman Bowman, hello.
Oh, Jesus.
Do you remember me?
Yes, I do.
Hey, so I just wanted to follow up.
I will not be talking right now, sir.
We don't have to right now, but can we find a time?
I told you to reach out to my office.
I did, yeah. They said they would, but they just haven't gotten back to me yet.
Oh, well, it's only been a week. Hello.
It has only been a week,
yes,
correct.
Yes, yes. Please stop recording me.
Okay. But you
promise me we'll talk soon.
Huh?
Promise me we'll talk soon.
Why do I gotta keep repeating myself?
All right. Why do you have to keep repeating yourself is because this is not a civics test. People die based on your vote, and you owe the world to do the homework, like do the minimum amount of homework, read a book. This week, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban told Tucker Carlson that the only way the U.S. will end this war is if Trump is reelected. It's certainly not going to be people like Congressman Bowman who don't understand what they're voting for, but vote anyway. Sending people to their death. These are the choices we've had, either people who want peace or people who vote for war and don't understand it. And that's unconscionable. Go ahead and play it.
If you were in charge of NATO, if you were, say, Joe Biden, what would your next move be in the war in Ukraine? What would you do?
Peace, immediately. Call back Trump. That's the only way out.
Call back Trump.
Call back Trump. Because, you know, you can criticize him for many reasons. I understand all the discussion. But, you know, the best foreign policy of the recent several decades belonged to him. He did not initiate any new war.
Yes.
He treated nicely the North Koreans and Russia, even the Chinese, you know. He delivered a policy which was the best one for Middle East, Abraham Accords.
Yes.
So that was a very good foreign policy. He's criticized that he's not educated enough to understand the world. But this is not the case. Facts count. And his foreign policy was the best one for the world in the last several decades I have seen. And if he would have been the president at the moment of the Russian invasion started, no, it would be not possible to do that by the Russians. So Trump is the man who can save the Western world.
Now, I'm not sure that President of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, would agree that Trump is a peace candidate. I'm not sure that the people of the Donbas would appreciate thinking that they would not currently be a part of Russia if there was no Biden administration. But the conflict, you know, would it continue to rage on in this way? Would we be getting the truth about it as Americans? There are all of these nuanced questions now that we owe ourselves to ask that maybe is uncomfortable because so many of you either like him or don't. And so the question of, like, would we be at peace or at war doesn't comport with just these binary questions. I realize that this is a complicated thing, right? But it deserves our attention because this is exactly what most people are freaking out about. It seems that the UK is already thinking Trump may win, and they're trying to sort of cover their tracks of warmongering. The US lawmakers now are trying to rip the brakes out of the car, basically, so that if Trump is reelected, the war machine can keep going. Look at this Wall Street Journal report today saying that the president is seeking to write laws to lock in U.S. support for Ukraine that would limit future governments' abilities to backtrack amid fears in European capitals that Donald Trump, if he recaptures the White House, would seek to scale back aid. I'm very perplexed by this subtext here under this photo saying European officials fear that Russian President Vladimir Putin will keep fighting in Ukraine until after the 2024 election, hoping a Republican victory would mean an end to American military aid. I think that I misunderstand that maybe. Like, who's hoping? Are Europeans hoping for a Republican victory so that then they won't have to be dragged into the war anymore? Or is it Republicans are hoping to? I'm not sure who's hoping for what. And I think even the media doesn't know. You know what I mean?
Well, what we do know is that they don't want Trump to be in there, and I don't think the deep state will allow it to happen. I don't think there's a chance in hell that the deep state is going to allow President Trump to become the next president of the United States. I think they were blindsided the first time, and I think it's absolutely not going to happen this time. And the reason they don't is because he would absolutely pull back on the amount that we're spending there and the amount and support for Ukraine.
And is there even any mechanism that Joe Biden could just set on cruise control that Donald Trump could not repeal? I don't think that's how that works. I don't see that. You need congressional approval to go to war, not to end a war that we're not even officially in.
I don't know all the all of the executive powers that would enable him to set in motion a sort of a forever budget for Ukraine. But in the same, unless there is, it's passed by the United States Congress as part of some sort of Defense Authorization Act, mm-hmm. where it's sort of like an extended Defense Authorization Act that goes farther into the future, where right. there's like an outlay that's being promised over the course of time. But he could, if he wanted to, if you're president of the United States, by fiat, come in and say, we're canceling this Osprey program. We're canceling this boondoggle for this new jet program. We're canceling all of this left and right. But that's where Trump got in trouble last time, is that he tried to do a lot of those things and he was met with major resistance inside the Pentagon and told that he couldn't do those things. No, you don't have the authority to do that. He's like, what? I don't have the authority? What are you talking about? I'm president of the United States. Yeah. But see, a lot of these things are already set in motion. I mean, just look at a lot of the healthcare.gov provisions put in place by President Obama. A lot of those pieces, even with like Congress removing it, even with like an executive order, you still have the tentacles of Obamacare that you cannot unravel. Right. So a lot of this stuff can be permanent, unfortunately.
Well, yes. Also, couldn't they, because if he's a wartime president, if we actually do end up declaring war on Russia or Taiwan, I think he could technically stay in until that was over. If that ended up being a forever war, he would be president until he died, most likely. Right.
Yeah. Continuity of government. I mean, there's a whole lot of questions about that. I think the larger point is, though, that once you put a lot of these things in motion, it's very difficult to unwind them, certainly government outlays for a war. So, yeah, in many ways, this is like a forever contract that we're putting in place to keep a forever war going in Ukraine. And Zelensky's going to get his wish, which is that Ukraine is treated as the next Israel. He wants Ukraine to become the next Israel, where we pump in tens of billions of dollars a year to Israel to support them. And this is exactly what's happening in Ukraine.
Yeah. So we'll just end this segment by looking one more time at the map, because we looked at the map of where the drone strikes were, nowhere near here. But we'll at least look at an update of where the conflict currently is. Again, if you look at the red parts there, those are the parts that voted to become a part of Russia that have been bombed by Ukraine, shelled since 2014, civilian areas now being protected by Russia. So if you think, oh, well, Russia should just go home and Ukrainians will stop dying, well, then the people, the civilians that live in that red territory will go back to being bombed on a regular basis, to the point where, again, the IMF told Ukraine in 2015 to stop spending $1 million per day to wage war on these civilians. So this is where the line is currently. This is where the conflicts are in blue, and the counteroffensive did not push that red back at all. And we have no reason to believe that it will.
Thank you for that, Cheryl. A couple of people commenting on my Trump comments. Cheryl Foth says, Clayton, don't ever say Donald Trump will not win in 2024 again. That's enough for me not to ever listen to your show again. Look, Cheryl.
You didn't say that. You said they won't let him.
I didn't say he would not win. I didn't say that at all. He might win. I'm saying they won't let him. I'm saying the deep state will not let him. Do you disagree with me? I mean, look what they did to him. I mean, so look what they're doing to him right now.
You're being very pessimistic.
I am. Kay Redding says, you're being pessimistic. Look, I'm a pretty positive. Would you say that I'm a pretty I'm always like a glass half full kind of person. I always try to find the good. But when I'm seeing, when I know how our government operates and I understand how this deep state operates and I see what they do, I mean, what's there to be positive about with this government? It's full of snakes.
I don't see as being pessimistic to be realistic at what you see. I mean, we see what is happening, and it's like obvious they're going to do everything in their power to stop him from getting in there.
Yeah, and then you
we
can be unprepared about it, right?
A two-party justice
right.
system.
You can be like, I didn't even see this coming. I'm warning you that this is happening. I see it coming down the tracks. I just don't see how it happens. I mean, it's, again, how did Joe Biden get 80 million votes? The most in U.S. history. Like, really? Okay. 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 I'm sorry. Something smells really, really fishy. I just don't see a chance in hell that they let President Trump in the White House again.
And so it's so interesting now because, again, in talking about this with Mike Jones, he says it seems like the UK press is all but resigned that Trump will regain office and that they need to cover their tracks, sort of, get out the shredder for the things that they did for the Biden administration. So I think that's an interesting temperature point, don't you?
I mean, just look at Julian Assange for a second. If I was like to tell you the story of this guy who's a journalist who reported on war crimes of the United States in Iraq and as a country of free speech and freedom of the press, you would say there's no chance that this guy would be literally sitting in a prison rotting and dying. He's going to be extradited and then prosecuted and held up in prison in the United States for the rest of his life. Like that's what's happening. The deep state is winning. When Mike Pompeo admits openly that, yeah, he wanted to go after and kill Julian Assange, the head of the CIA, the deep state. I mean, they're saying it out in the open. Just look at Julian Assange as a template for how this stuff operates. He's sitting in Belmarsh prison, rotting away terribly. So it's hard for me. I mean, I'm a pretty positive person, but when I see how these guys operate, you do the reading and you understand the research about these guys, it's hard to be positive about the United States government in this way.
Okay. I mean, I don't think that's our job to say.
What is?
To like make predictions though. You know? I think.
Okay.
I'm not comfortable doing that. You can be.
All right. I'm comfortable doing it. I've been around it long enough. I will do that. All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Wednesday.
Give me a second. I have to reset I have to reset my companion. I completely lost control of the show. Hang, give me one second.
Okay.
Are we still live?
Can I flip it? I'll flip it. Look, I can do it.
Yeah.
Look at this.
Yeah. We're still live.
I'm pressing buttons. Can you see that? Look at that.
Camera wow. one. Camera two.
See, Philip usually runs the show. I'm doing it now. I'm doing it. This is really weird.
You don't even need me. I'm gonna go. I'll have a good day.
See you, Philip.
I have to restart companion, so give me a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
You've got some of the control, but you don't have all of the control.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell people what's coming up here on the show. We'll tell people what's coming up. We're going to talk about Canada and these mask mandates. So this is an unbelievable two-part story, really, in Canada. You have, first of all, a woman who refused to get the vaccine in Canada. Said, I'm not getting the vaccine. And then she had to get an organ transplant. And she was denied getting an organ transplant because she was unvaccinated. So then she dies and she passes away because she was not able to get that organ transplant. In addition to which, there's a new renewed push in Canada for mask mandates and continuing to push for masking in hospital settings and other pharmacies and other healthcare services. So that's Canada. We'll have a report on that in a moment. But first,
I wonder if it would be a much different temperature now, though, for mask, because the government can no longer say what we censor speech online, where we were encouraged to make fun of people who were anti-maskers online.
The media was. Yeah. And social media.
Would it be different this time around? Would we then like go to maskers and say, hey, actually,
look at the
data
studies.
Shows that, it's actually toxic to breathe in your own bodies.
And it's not doing anything to protect you.
And also there are forever chemicals in those masks. So would you like to rethink that? Or are we going to then go through where we, make fun of asthmatic people?
Yeah,
that
keep was up the fun, charade.
Right?
Yeah, keep up the charade.
Make fun of people who were asthmatic, who didn't want to wear masks. That's what we did. Okay, we're going to get to that in a minute. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Genucel. Because ladies, when you look in the mirror, do you see those dark spots? Well, they're not going away on their own. So we're introducing the Dark Spot Corrector from Genucel right in time for summer. The Dark Spot Corrector, with not one but three cutting-edge ingredients, goes to work fast to target sunspots, dark spots, liver spots, and even old discoloration, both on your face and hands. You'll be amazed at how quickly you'll see results. You can now enjoy your summer sun, beach, and barbecues without those embarrassing spots. With Genucel, you'll see the results of your money back or no questions asked. So go to Genucel.com/redacted right now and get your dark spot corrector with the new Genucel Most Popular Package, featuring summer essentials like the best-selling Ultra Retinol Moisturizer with a powerful retinol alternative for safe use in the summer sun. Once again, visit Genucel.com/redacted right now for these amazing summer essentials and save over 70% off Genucel's Most Popular Package. Don't wait. Order Genucel's Most Popular Package right now. It's free shipping, free returns, and the best luxury skincare you've ever used, all at 70% off. We had a comment in the chat saying Genucel's really good stuff. It's worth the investment. Again, that's Genucel.com/redacted. All orders will include a mystery gift while supplies last. One more time, that's Genucel.com/redacted.
Now to Trudeau's Canada, where craziness is its middle name. Imagine being unvaccinated in Canada, and you find out that you need to have an organ transplant, but you are then denied that organ transplant because you are unvaccinated. You decided to not get one of these Pfizer shots, one of these Moderna shots to protect your body. You're denied the organ transplant as a result. Then a member of parliament, a member of Trudeau's government, comes out and says, after she dies for being unable to get this organ transplant, she deserved to die. This is what's happening in Canada. Plus, we've got a renewed push for mask mandates in Canada. Covering all of these stories for us today is David Craden. He hosts Craden's Right on YouTube. He writes at the Post-Millennial and Human Rights, and he joins us now. David, great to see you. This story is outrageous. A member of parliament decides to jump on Twitter after a woman dies from being denied an organ transplant and says, well, she deserved it. She deserved it.
Well, I want to read the tweet, as they say now, the post on X. And I know Charlie Angus from my days on Parliament Hill. He always sold himself as a populist, which is why as a new Democratic member of Parliament, which is the Socialist Party in Canada, he's managed to stay elected in a relatively small C conservative area of Northern Ontario. But recently, Sherry Annette Lewis died about a week ago because she couldn't get an organ transplant and she was unvaccinated. And that's the only reason she couldn't get an organ transplant. So Charlie Angus decides to post, a woman died because she preferred to fight for disinformation, anti-vax bullshit, and conspiracy. Pierre Poilievre says she is a hero. And the rest of it really isn't related to Sherry Annette Lewis. But that, to me, is just beyond the pale. And it's not just outrageous, it's almost criminal. This is, for a member of parliament to be celebrating somebody dying because she's on the wrong side of the issue, this to me is absolutely symbolic of how crazy the authoritarian left has become in Canada. And they'd rather see somebody die because they couldn't get an organ transplant than admit there was absolutely no reason for her to be vaccinated. And that's really the other story here, is that she didn't even get COVID. She was unvaccinated and she didn't get COVID because she had natural immunity to it. And this is how outrageous this is.
What's more outrageous, well, that's outrageous enough, but what's perhaps more outrageous is the idea that you would deny at a national level, I guess, I don't know if it's a national level or provincial level, that you would deny someone getting an organ transplant because they're unvaccinated? What sort of bureaucratic gobbledygook is in place that keeps someone from getting an organ transplant? Where did this come from?
What really infuriates me is that this woman came from Alberta, where supposedly it's the last bastion of the free in Canada. It's the last place where you're allowed to voice dissent, where the premier of that province has previously said that the unvaccinated are the most discriminated against group that she's ever seen in her lifetime. And yet she did nothing to intervene with Alberta healthcare. And you have to remember, in Canada, we are on universal healthcare, supposedly free, but of course it's not. So this woman was denied it in Alberta, and she would have been denied the organ transplant in any province in Ontario, because every provincial healthcare scheme is supplemented by the federal government. So it is they are working in tandem. She tried to go to the United States to get the operation. She tried, and her supporters tried to raise money for her. They didn't raise enough fast enough, and she died. This is how tragic this is. But you know what the reason is? And this is mind-boggling. The reason they won't do an organ transplant for the unvaccinated is they say having a new organ makes you more susceptible to viral infection. So therefore, we'd rather you not get the organ transplant. So that's not even a catch-22. That is just downright insanity. So they'd rather see you die with the failing organ than get a new organ on the assumption that you might be somehow more susceptible to the COVID-19 virus. Now, how insane is that?
That's absolutely insane. So you're going to die from a viral infection because what? The organ has COVID? It makes no sense at all. And I think we've had the Canadian Parliament admitting basically that they're not using science, they're using politics in these decisions. I mean, we've learned this, right, through lawsuits. So this is not science.
No, and it shows you it's all about ideology. It's about crazy healthcare ideology, because she has already demonstrated that she was not susceptible to COVID. And even if she was, the chance of her dying from COVID are minuscule compared to the certainty of her dying without a new organ. And she's not the only one this has happened to. I mean, there was another case here in Ontario of a guy named Garnet Harper, who was denied an organ transplant for the same reason. He was unvaccinated. And what makes this even more insidious is that on his deathbed, the nurse came around to say, can we collect your organs when you die? So not only was he denied a life-saving organ, they wanted to collect his organs. And his wife was so outraged by this, she just said, forget it. Forget it. We're not buying into this. You won't even give my husband an organ transplant. He's dying. He's on his deathbed. And you're coming around with the form so he can sign off and he can sign over his organs. I mean, is this 1984 we're living in Canada? I think so.
Which brings us to these mask mandates and the push for renewed mask mandates. So out in Vancouver, you got, you know, craziness on that coast as well. You had a renewed push for, you have activists calling for a push for mask mandates in Vancouver. I mean, in Canada at large. And we're starting to see this more and more now as this new, variant of COVID is taking hold. The Biden administration, of course, calling on Congress to approve billions more for the biopharmaceutical complex to roll this out. And this all follows on a story we just had on the show the other night about COVID masks and how those surgical masks have massive amounts of toxins in them. So now you have activists in Canada pushing for a return to mask mandates.
What brought me out here is my basic moral outrage.
Outrage over masking protocols that were dropped in BC in April. A Do Not Harm BC protest was held outside the office of Adrian Dix, BC's health minister, calling on the provincial government to reinstate mandatory masking in healthcare settings.
What do you make of this?
Well, the fact that this occurred in Vancouver doesn't surprise me. Vancouver's gone the way of San Francisco and Los Angeles. But it goes to show you how maniacal the left has become, or not even just the left, the people who seem to love authoritarianism in their life. They love to have the state dictate what they should do and what they shouldn't do. So here's these people, despite overwhelming evidence that the masks not only didn't prevent COVID-19 in any real way, that they might have actually contributed to your unhealth. They might have actually contributed you being unhealthy. And despite that, they're begging the BC Minister of Health to bring back mask mandates, please, so we can wear these and our children can go to school and suffocate all day and we can continue to breathe in these toxins. And even if you don't believe there's toxins in the mask, you're breathing in your own CO2 all day long. And of course, that's no good for you, especially right. since it's doing nothing to fend off the virus.
We had multiple doctors tell us that that's the reason my daughter got pneumonia, was breathing back in the bacteria that was causing her pneumonia and wound up in the hospital as a result of it. Countless children with that exact same issue and pulmonary issues as a result of these masks. And it turns out multiple studies showing that these N95 masks offer zero protection against the COVID virus. So now, I mean, the sort of authoritarian, the love of dictatorship, the love of authoritarianism in Canada, pushing for people to wear masks around them, telling other people what to do with their body. And there is this whole strain of shaming, the mask shaming. So are you seeing like a return to mask shaming now in Canada? You don't have one. It's getting cold out there. COVID's back. You're on public transportation. You're in a school. You're in a mall. You better be wearing a mask again.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but I sure saw it during the height of the pandemic, and I expect to see it again. But it's interesting to me at this protest, there was a counter protest, thank God, from other people in Vancouver who think this is insanity. But it's interesting that the pro-mask people physically attacked the anti-mask people.
Right.
And this to me illustrates how wacky the pro-mask left has become. They think they have the right to attack people for not wearing masks. I've never felt that if you really want to wear a mask, that is your right. And I might quietly laugh at people who are riding their bikes down a path or jogging with a mask on, but I'll do that quietly because I think it's not just ludicrous, it's insane. But I'm certainly not going to attack that person for wearing a mask. That is
I might laugh at the
decision
person
he or she has made.
You know, I might quietly laugh at the person. I was literally last week, I was on a glacier in the middle of Norway. You can't get more remote than that. And the air is as crisp and clean as you could imagine. And there's a person there on the glacier, no one around, wearing a mask. I thought, my God, you know, this is what it's come to. This is what it's come to, that they've been so programmed into thinking somehow that's helping them. They're being protected against a glacier from getting COVID or whatever they think they're getting as a result of it. But I would never think to attack this person over. I'm quietly going to laugh at this person. That's my right. You know, this clown world that we live in, but I'm not going to attack a person over their mask wearing.
Well, and that's, you know, that's precisely how most common sense people react, not with physical violence, because they just think, you know, I have my right not to wear a mask. You have your right to wear a mask. And to me, the fact that there were counter protesters here is indicative that there's still hope for this country, because I hear it all the time from a lot of American commentators. They have dismissed Canada as a foregone authoritarian conclusion. But thank God, a lot of Canadians are fighting back. We saw it with this counter protest in Vancouver, and we're seeing it on other issues. You know, and not to be off topic, but this month we're going to see a million person march against Trudeau's gender ideology, and we're seeing people who are fed up with the whole left-wing agenda. And I tell you, this time around, it's not going to be as easy as it was the last time around for Justin Trudeau to put masks on everybody. And for these authoritarian premiers who are just as bad as some of those state governors who were lockdown kings and queens. It's not going to be that easy this time around because people are going to push back because Canada has a basic sense of freedom and democracy that has not yet been extinguished by this authoritarian Justin Trudeau government. And I believe and I hope Canadians are going to continue to push back and fight back for their democratic rights.
I hope so, too. We have many, many tens of thousands of Canadians who watch this show. So please, please push back against this tyranny. I hope that they will. And thank you for shining a light on it, David. David Craden, you can catch him on Craden's Right over on YouTube. Thank you so much for this and continued keeping an eye on the craziness that has been unfolding in Canada. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you for having me, Clayton.
I feel a lot of empathy for people who are so anxietized about that and so, you know, ill-informed and so anxietized. It's like when someone cuts you off in traffic and like really, it's like, I'm so sorry that you feel that way.
Yeah.
Like, that must be incredibly stressful to be you.
To live your whole life like, okay, no, I'm not just wearing one mask today. I'm going to put on one mask and then double it up and head out into the world and then go and tell other people how they should live their lives.
Yeah.
I'm going to stand outside and protest about this in the middle of August in Canada.
People wearing those like plastic masks with the mask inside with tape and everything, like completely covering their whole heads. Like, I just felt sorry for those people that they just, you know, live that way in that much fear.
Someone in our chat said, do you remember the person that had the condom over their head? There was like early on, they were seen at a grocery store with some sort of like condom contraption around their head, like blocking out air. It's like, oh my God.
No.
Got to go
no.
get your Costco cup of noodles. Massive package of cup of noodles with your condom head.
Yeah.
Your head condom, like
nice. Head condom. Oh my God, what is going on like in this
ribbed
crazy
for your,
world?
Ribbed for your displeasure.
Yeah. Oh, that'll ruin your afternoon. We got more news to get to. So just a few minutes ago, the United States issued an alert that all Americans should get out of Haiti. All Americans should get out of Haiti. What does that mean? America likes to do that before they like to, you know, do some sort of invasionary force. So who is in Haiti? Who did we just send to Haiti? And who is currently there is Dan Cohen, redacted correspondent. So the United States says get out. And then Dan goes. We're going to have a report from Haiti that he filed earlier today. We spoke because there could be a peace agreement breaking out between some warring factions. And certainly the U.S. government doesn't like that. Because they want a destabilized Haiti. It means cheap labor. They get to exploit its resources. That's exactly what the United States wants. So we will cover that in a second. But first, as many of you know, from time to time, we bring on our friend Kevin DeMeritt, the founder of Lear Capital, on the show to bring some valuable insight as to what's happening in the global economy. And recently, Kevin provided some insight on why so many countries led by the BRICS nations plan to move out from underneath the U.S. dollar to a gold-backed currency, which is exactly what this could mean for people's valued savings and retirement accounts. When so many of these countries are moving to gold, look at the price of gold today up, look at the price of silver today up as a result of what we are seeing now with these BRICS nations. I strongly recommend you call our friends over at Lear Capital or go to LearRedacted.com, get a free copy of their report called The Tipping Point Report. It's totally free. And it'll really help explain how to protect your savings and your retirement with gold and silver. It's only a matter of time until we're forced to be using digital currencies. So you need to get educated quickly about this process to preserve the wealth that you already have. We're already seeing it in Europe. They're already making a clampdown on cash. So making sure that you actually have tangible assets that are not necessarily stored at your house, although you can have gold and silver coins and bars stored in your safe at your house. Or offsite and offsite storage, which is what we do. And very, very important to have those assets protected away from these corrupt governments. So for the past few years, Natalie and I have been moving away from the US dollar into hard assets like gold, silver, and real estate. This is a big part of our portfolio. So we see the writing on the wall. Lear Capital can get you this Tipping Point report right now. It's totally free on what this means for the US dollar. Protect your family. Go to LearRedacted.com or call their 800 number, which is 1-800-613-3557. And this report will open your eyes to what's coming. And I want to thank Kevin and the folks at Lear Capital for putting this report together for redacted viewers. The number again is 1-800-613-3557, or go online right now to learredacted.com. And also you can click the link below in our description. All right. Well, just a few minutes ago, the United States government issued an alert asking that all Americans leave Haiti, get out now. And so what did we do? We sent Dan Cohen to Haiti in the opposite direction to find out what the hell is actually happening there, because the United States has been itching and asking Canada and other countries like Kenya to put a military force inside of Haiti to help basically destabilize that region. I spoke to Dan just a short time ago in Haiti. He is there right now, and he filed this report. Well, is all hell about to break loose in Haiti with a U.S.-backed invasion, or are we about to see a period of peace breaking out, led by the Haitian people themselves? The United States certainly doesn't want a period of calm in Haiti. That would totally undermine their invasionary plans. So what's going on exactly? Redacted correspondent Dan Cohen is back in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and joins us now with the very latest on the situation. Of course, really the only journalist covering this story from Haiti. Dan, good to see you. What's going on there?
Hey, Clayton. Yeah, so the U.S. for the last 2 years has been calling for a Haitian-led solution to Haiti's problems, and that's been a euphemism for its kind of political maneuvering and backing of various forces that it wants to put in power. But what we're actually seeing right now, what I'm seeing on the ground here in Port-au-Prince and throughout Haiti, is a tentative, however fraught, peace breaking out. Essentially, what's happening is the various armed groups, and some of which are criminal in nature, carry out kidnappings, extortion, robberies, these sorts of things, and the anti-crime armed groups that are essentially neighborhood self-defense groups, they have created a peace. And this is not an alliance. This is not to say they're on the same side, but it is a peace. They have stopped fighting, at least for the time being. Now, they're again, it's very fraught. There are still kidnappings going on. There are still killings going on. There was, in the neighborhood of Canaan, a few days ago, there was a group of marchers led by a pastor who went to confront a very brutal gang leader named Jeff, and he killed an unknown number of them. There's a video of these marchers going with machetes, and his men sprayed them with guns and killed at least several of them. The police don't even know how many were killed. So the situation is still very violent in many ways. However, there is not direct fighting between the armed groups of different neighborhoods. Now, that actually allowed us to access this area, the south. Now, the choke point for the south of Haiti is back right along here. If you can see where I'm pointing, I don't know how well you can see, but this is the southern peninsula of Haiti. And previously, that was totally inaccessible and impossible to cross that main thoroughfare. It is under the control of a gang leader named Tila Pli and a gang leader named Izo, who control these neighborhoods, and those are two of the biggest kidnappers in the country. Because of this peace between Izo and Tila Pli on one side and a leader named Krisla on the other. Krisla is part of the G9 anti-crime coalition, and they have been fighting for years. There's now this peace. People can actually go through there, and we were able to go through yesterday, accompanied by some of Krisla's men to give us an added layer of security. But previously, that was completely unthinkable. So the ability to move around, to travel, not only for us, but of course for Haitians, is totally different than it's been in quite a long time. That gave us access to the south of the country, where we met with a prominent, well-known police commissar who's taken a hardline approach to the gangs. His approach is just kill them, total hard fist. He's well known for actually executing them live on camera in the street. So that's the position he's come to. And so we sat down with him. You'll see that in that interview in an upcoming report on Redacted. But again, the situation, very fraught, very complex, but it's the very beginnings of possible peace, this Haitian-led solution the U.S. has been calling for. There's also the Kenyan mission. A Kenyan mission of 1,000 police has been pledged. The Kenyan government has pledged that it will send 1,000 of its police officers to take part in a UN-sanctioned mission to combat gangs here in Haiti. And they were here last week. Basically, the Kenyan diplomatic force and police officials were shepherded around Port-au-Prince by U.S. State Department personnel and protected by U.S. military personnel. And they met with Haitian National Police. They met with the de facto government of Ariel Henry, the unelected U.S.-anointed leader who has called for this intervention in the first place. And there are conflicting reports about what the Kenyans have said following that reconnaissance mission. One report in the Miami Herald says that they actually decided they don't want to carry out offensive operations to confront these gangs, none of which they don't differentiate between the anti-crime popular militias or neighborhood self-defense groups and the criminal groups. They don't differentiate at all. So they're all gangs in the eyes of the government and the international community. And so the Kenyans, on one hand, in the Miami Herald say, we don't want to do that, according to their reporting. There's another paper here in Haiti, Les Nouvellistes, who has said that the Kenyans are willing to carry out operations. Now, if you look at what the proposal that's been floated is, it's very open-ended. It's, you know, it's combat gangs, this kind of thing. There's no actual exit strategy. There are no benchmarks of what they want to accomplish, of what they'll ostensibly accomplish. So it's a very open-ended and vague question, let alone if, say, you have 1,000 Kenyan police officers who, firstly, don't speak the language. This is, you know, a former British colony, so they speak English in addition to Swahili. So they don't speak the same language. They don't have any, they're not Francophone. They don't speak French. Of course, they don't speak Creole, the local language. They don't know the terrain. So if half of those Kenyan forces are dedicated to securing sites, you have about a 1-to-1, maybe 2-to-1 combat ratio, sending in 2 Kenyan police into some urban warfare terrain where they frankly don't stand a chance against even the unprofessional young men who have taken up arms for various reasons. So if this Kenyan mission or whatever, however it forms, is carried out, it would be a total bloodbath, not only for the Kenyans, but more so for the Haitians and especially the civilians who populate these neighborhoods. So that proposal is even more fraught than the peace that's breaking out here.
So I mentioned at the top, the United States really does not want a stable Haiti, a peaceful Haiti. And we've talked about this at length on the show. Why would the United States want a destabilized Haiti? What is in it for the United States? And I should mention that we were able to find one spot for Dan to do this report because the signal is so bad there, and he's near an air conditioning unit. So if you hear some of that background noise and some of the street noise, this is the best that we could do under the circumstances in Haiti at the moment. So, Dan, why would the United States want a destabilized Haiti? How does that benefit the U.S.?
Well, a destabilized Haiti keeps Haitians from organizing to improve their conditions and ultimately to improve their country. For example, we saw a couple of weeks ago the head of one of the big apparel industries based in the United States, a U.S. apparel industry organization, endorsed the Kenyan mission in Haiti, saying, "Oh, we need that, in order to stabilize the situation." Well, the situation that the apparel industry, for example, among others, benefit so much from is maximum exploitation. A lot of the neighborhoods around me people work in sweatshops. There's a whole industrial zone about a mile and a half that way that the Clintons actually put together, and has been existing, you know, for years and years before that. But the main industrial area is a project of the Clintons, and those people earn exceptionally a small amount of money, a couple of dollars per day. And if they're actually able to organize, well, then they can demand more money per day, or maybe they nationalize those industries and say, wait a minute, why are we working for a foreign corporation and where they take most of the profits when we can actually do that same labor and keep the profits, you know, keep the, most of the profits and have a fair, equitable trade deal with them. But the U.S. doesn't want that. In fact, Haiti Liberté back in, I think, 2010, 2011, revealed in collaboration with WikiLeaks cables they had obtained showing how the U.S. Embassy actually intervened to make sure that wages for those sweatshop workers stayed suppressed, stayed low. So that's a big reason. I mean, another reason is, you know, the geopolitical chessboard. If you look at where Haiti sits next to Cuba, which obviously is out of the U.S. grasp, and very close to Venezuela, which it's had historic relations with, that's, you know, there's an important role there too. So, I mean, the U.S. is, as with everywhere, is very much afraid of some kind of domino effect where, you know, the more countries that get out of its grip. I mean, look what's happening in you know, West Africa right now with all of these military coup d'etats that are taking those countries out of the sort of neocolonial grip. So Haiti is important for U.S. manufacturing base, especially with the new Cold War with China, as the global economic system bifurcates and the United States pulls and its corporations pull their manufacturing base from China. They want to bring things closer to home where it's a safer, cheaper bet. And it's not, you know, it falls along the geopolitical program that they want to install. So they want to always keep Haiti in the grip of the U.S.
Well, Dan is going to be filing a number of reports from Haiti on this return trip to see what is happening there on the heels of this Kenyan delegation that's been there and what the United States and Canada are planning to do with this invasionary force or the sort of proxy invasionary force as a potential peace seems to be taking hold there, pissing off the United States, no doubt. Dan, thank you for this report from Port-au-Prince. We know you've got a lot of interviews that you're doing today and going to be traveling around Haiti today. So we'll let you go, and we will see you back here real soon. Thanks so much, Dan.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Clay.
And our thanks to Dan for joining us a short time ago there in Haiti. We look forward to his reports throughout the week and the amazing reporting that he's been doing there. And, you know, I just want to say thanks to all of you for supporting independent journalism, for us to be able to bring you these stories. It's with the help of you being able to subscribe and just hitting that like button. It helps us to be able to push us further out in the algorithm, both on Rumble and on YouTube. So that's all we ask. If you just be so kind, subscribe, be a part of our great community here, share these videos with people that need their eyes opened to these stories. You know, it's very, very important for us to be able to share a story about Haiti so that the United States doesn't invade and destabilize this country. Like, real lives are on the line. And it's very, very important that we get these messages out. So thank you so much for supporting what we do here. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time live. As always, have a great night, and thank you for everything that you do in supporting independent journalism. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone.